Last time, we talked about how AI tools are often designed to feel human and why that's a problem. We looked at how this can confuse users, blur the line between tool and person, and make it harder to understand what these systems are actually doing. The takeaway was simple: let machines be machines, make their role clear, designed for transparency, not illusion. Today, we're shifting focus. This episode is about how people are responding to AI, not the technology itself, but the social pressure that comes with using it. There's a growing idea that relying on AI, even for small tasks, says something about your skill, your effort, even your character. It's what some are calling the AI purity test. And it's creating a new kind of social sorting where avoiding AI is seen as a mark of authenticity, and using it quietly signals something else. We're going to look at where that pressure comes from, who benefits from it, and what it says about the culture we're building around these tools. We're in the middle of a shift, not just in technology, but in how we see each other. A kind of unspoken judgment is creeping into creative and professional spaces. It shows up in small ways: a pause after reading a perfectly polished memo, a comment like, "This feels a bit robotic. Did they make this themselves or did AI help?" That's what people are starting to call the AI purity test. There's no rule book or checklist. It's more of a cultural reflex, but it's powerful. Because more and more, the tools we use are becoming part of how we're judged, not just for our work, but for our values. What the AI purity test reflects, honestly, are deeply rooted anxieties regarding authorship, authenticity, and, well, the very role of machines in shaping these concepts. It's not just, did you use AI? But rather, why? What does using AI say about you? Is it a shortcut, a crutch, or worse, some kind of less authentic effort? These judgments hint at something deeper: how technophobia and elitism intermingle to create new kinds of social sorting. The purity test is really about what it means to produce something real. And so as we frame today's discussion, I want us to see the AI purity test for what it is: a lens through which we can examine how society is rewriting its hierarchies in real time. It's worth asking, isn't it? Whether we're embracing or avoiding these technologies, what are those choices signaling about us? So let's dive in. What exactly is this so-called AI purity test we're talking about? Well, at its core, it's this unwritten rule, an implicit social norm. It's where someone's refusal to use AI, or even their ability to conceal its use, gets equated with, well, intellectual virtue, creative legitimacy even. And it sneaks into conversations. Phrases like, "Are you sure this wasn't written by ChatGPT?" These aren't just innocent comments, they're tiny, subtle acts of gatekeeping. But let me ask you this: have we seen this kind of behavior before? Oh, absolutely. Now think about history, rituals, tests, boundaries. Certain forms of purity have always held symbolic power. Consider, for example, in religion, where purity often equates to this idea of moral virtue, the sacred versus the profane. Or in politics, where pledges of loyalty or ideological purity have been wielded to decide who's in, and crucially, who's out. And then, of course, there's art, where a whole lineage of debates around authenticity and skill are packed into questions like, "But did they really paint this?" What's intriguing is how similar these purity frameworks are to what we're watching unfold with AI. They're not, about measuring actual skill or effort per se. They're symbolic. These tests are socially constructed signals, ways of deciding who belongs and who doesn't. That's the part that's a little unnerving, isn't it? Who gets to decide the boundaries of authenticity? And what criteria are they really using? But maybe you've noticed this too: this purity obsession actually rewards the performance of effort, not genuine effort. If something looks, or more importantly, feels unauthentic to the observer, then that's all it takes to discredit it. It's kind of troubling. Now, when we think of this deliberate opting out of AI, it might seem like a moral stance, right? an act of resistance, a way to say, I stand for authenticity. But here's the thing, refusing AI is often a privilege. The people who can afford to start from scratch are usually the ones with security, senior creatives, tenured faculty, leaders with established reputations. They have the time and resources to take the long route. For others, AI isn't optional. It's how they manage relentless deadlines, language barriers, or simply the pressure to keep up. We've seen this dynamic before. It mirrors what we have called rich reset culture, the trend of wellness sabbaticals, digital detoxes, or quitting social media. These acts are framed as ethical or mindful, but they also signal something else. I have enough stability to opt out. Saying no to AI can carry the same weight. It becomes a performance of self-sufficiency, a signal that says, I don't need help to do this the right way. But what they do have is nothing but time. So, in reframing this cultural moment, I'm struck by how familiar it feels, how it echoes these cycles of exclusivity we've always seen. Perhaps this trend, this AI purity, isn't about technology at all. Perhaps it's about who gets to define what's valuable, what's elegant, and who gets left out. So let's talk about how this performance of authenticity shows up outside the world of AI, shall we? Because, well, this idea of virtue is tied to how something is created. It's a persistent theme in cultural industries, art, music, literature. Whether it's insisting on vinyl over digital recordings because it sounds, you know, more real, or valuing a hand-thrown vase over one that's cast in a mould, the script is familiar. There's this perennial preference for the more labour-intensive, even if it's, well, not necessarily the more practical. Take, for instance, the culinary world. Food is such a rich arena for this, isn't it? Think about how people talk about slow food, farm-to-table movements, the underlying message. That these slower, more traditional methods are not just better, they're worthier. And the same thing really is happening with AI. The choice to resist it, to do things the old way, becomes a way of performing virtue. It's less about the actual outcome and more about signalling what and who you value in the process. But of course, not everyone can afford to make these symbolic choices, can they? The insistence on labour-intensive methods on performance over pragmatism creates a kind of gatekeeping. It decides who gets to participate in those spaces, who gets to be seen as legitimate, as authentic. A system that encourages perfection over process doesn't leave much room for reflection, and AI tools, as they're currently designed, reinforce this. They give you fast results, clean results, but they rarely prompt you to slow down, rethink, or dig deeper. That part is up to you and your own capacity. When AI becomes a tool of survival for some and a symbol of shortcut-taking to others, the judgment isn't really about the work. It's about who's allowed to need help. Those who rely on AI aren't avoiding effort. They're adapting to systems that demand too much too fast. But because the tools are built for output, not dialogue, that reliance gets flattened. It's seen as dependence rather than resilience. And in a culture that still rewards the performance of effort over the context behind it, using AI becomes a liability, especially for those without the privilege to opt out. The issue isn't the tool itself, it's the assumptions built into how it works. Most AI systems are designed for efficiency. They answer quickly, they don't ask questions, they present certainty. And when we use them that way, we end up reinforcing a culture that values appearance over engagement. But it doesn't have to be that way. The Blue Origin all-female spaceflight is a helpful metaphor here. It was hailed as a milestone for representation. But the flight itself was fully automated. The participants had no control over the ship. The all-female crew were included in the narrative, but not in the mechanics. It was progress without agency, a symbol but not a shift in power. We see a similar pattern in how AI systems like Alexa or Siri are designed. Their feminized voices present a familiar, approachable interface, while the actual decision-making remains hidden and male-dominated. Gender becomes a performance layered over a complex, opaque system. just as the appearance of inclusion masked the automated reality of the flight. In both cases, identity is used to signal empowerment while maintaining control elsewhere. The interface is symbolic, the power stays out of reach. But if you pause to think about it, ask the right questions, you start to feel it, don't you? That same gap, the one on that Blue Origin flight, shows up in our daily technology-assisted interactions too. Because who's really piloting these tools? Who decides how they work, what they suggest, what they leave out? It's not you, it's the engineers, the coders, the companies that built the closed proprietary systems. You're not flying this thing right now, you're riding shotgun at best. But this too will evolve quickly. Let's take a moment to talk about design and how design shapes behavior. Every system we use carries assumptions about how we're supposed to interact with it. Design theorist Don Norman calls this affordance, what a system makes possible and what it makes likely. A door can suggest pushing or pulling depending on how it's built. It's not about the instructions, it's about the cues. Now think about AI tools. Most are designed for speed and polish. You type a prompt, and out comes a finished product, clean, coherent, ready to use. But what does that actually encourage? It pushes us toward passive interaction. You don't have to think through the steps. You don't have to reflect. You don't even have to ask whether the output makes sense. You just accept it and move on. That kind of design doesn't just make things easier. It resets the standard. It turns polish into proof of competence and process into something invisible. That's exactly the environment where purity tests thrive. When everything looks finished, the only way to stand out is to say, "I didn't use help." It reinforces the idea that authenticity means working alone, but design can push in the other direction. What if AI tools were built to make the process visible? What if they prompted you to consider why a phrase was suggested or showed you the trade-offs behind a design choice? That's the core idea behind human-centered and metacognitive design. Don't just make things fast, make them thoughtful. Build in friction that leads to insight. Let users adjust tone, check assumptions, or revisit alternatives. Not to slow them down, but to help them think more clearly. This is how we move away from gatekeeping. Not by getting rid of AI, but by building tools that reward engagement, not just output. Tools that help people develop ideas, not just finish tasks. If we care about creativity, reflection, and learning, then design has to reflect that. The question isn't whether AI should help, it's whether it's helping us grow or just helping us keep up appearances. Here's the question that everyone should be asking themselves. Are we using AI to think more clearly or to perform the appearance of thought? We're entering a cultural moment where simulation is becoming the norm. Tools are designed to deliver polish, not process. Outputs are seamless. Effort is invisible. In that environment, it's easy to mistake fluency for insight. And that's the danger. We start to value looking smart over actually engaging deeply. But this isn't just about productivity, it's about identity. As deepfake culture spreads, we're adjusting to a world where manipulated reality is part of daily life. That's not just a media problem, it's a mindset shift. We're adapting to a reality where even humanness is something that has to be performed, and where machines are increasingly the benchmark. In that context, AI doesn't just simulate intelligence, it starts to reshape how we define it. Tools that were meant to help are now setting the standard. We're not just using them to keep up, we're using them to compete with a version of ourselves that's smoother, faster, more coherent, a version that doesn't exist except in output. If we're not careful, we risk building a culture that accepts simulation as enough, where coherence matters more than curiosity, where the line between thinking and looking like you're thinking gets harder to see. And that's exactly where design comes in. Because if simulation is becoming normal, we need tools that help us break the performance. Tools that reveal process, that make room for uncertainty, that help people ask better questions, not just give better answers. Design can either reinforce the performance or help us see through it. So here we are. The AI purity test isn't really about tools, it's about power, perception, and performance. It reflects a culture where appearances are mistaken for effort, and where rejecting help becomes a status symbol. In a world increasingly shaped by deepfakes and seamless simulations, we're not just questioning what's real. We're performing what we think real is supposed to look like. That's the deeper risk. When smoother becomes proof and authenticity is something you have to signal, we start measuring ourselves against machines, against outputs that are optimized to appear more coherent, more productive, more human than we are. Again, this isn't new. We have a history of perfecting resumes and cover letters that don't represent emotional intelligence or critical thinking in any shape or form. In those cases, we fail to rise to the moment when we are truly needed. It's not a standard worth chasing. Consider higher education and students who are trained to live up to the algorithm. They cannot perform outside of the box. Instead of asking whether something is pure, we should be asking whether it's meaningful. Did the tool help someone think more clearly? Did it support growth? Did it open up new ideas? Because the real challenge isn't using AI, it's using it in ways that build and preserve agency, that encourage reflection, that resist the pull toward performance for its own sake. In a culture comfortable with simulation, design becomes the battleground. We can keep building tools that reward surface, or we can build ones that help us think, question, and grow. And on that note, I'll leave you with a challenge, not just to rethink the tools you're using, but to rethink the narratives we're all wrapped up in. So let's not waste time judging who used what. Let's ask better questions. Let's choose systems that make us more human.